Thank you, Aaron, very much. That's kind of funny to, you know, just Joe. It's a, you know, as God does what he's doing in our lives over years and everything, you start feeling like you're actually less and less in so many ways, just like he's working in us, right? It's humbling and just so grateful for the work of God in all of our lives. It is amazing. God is indeed moving in this congregation, doing great things, and such a privilege to be a part. We had an amazing weekend last weekend, as you just saw, the men's retreat. It's so beautiful, and we're running into space issues down there at Sacred River Rendezvous, but we can't imagine doing it anywhere else because there are so many things that we can do that are all so close to all that. It's just amazing. We're looking at how do we get more guys there? How do we get more guys in rafts and everything? We've got some solutions to those things, and great problems to have because God is doing great things, and healthy things grow. Healthy things grow, and it's just a beautiful thing to see. And really grateful. I'm also really grateful that the women don't do a retreat like that, because when they're gone for a few days, it's not good. It takes us a week to recover. And oh my goodness, it's a lot easier for a guy to be gone sometimes than when our wives are gone. We're like, I don't even know what to do. We've got a pantry full of you know stuff to cook, but I don't know what. And so everybody just ends up going out to eat or something. I don't know. Get some pizza. So it is a profound reminder a lot of times how grateful we are for everybody in our congregation. Men, especially if you were gone and you haven't heard Josh's message from last weekend, it is amazing. I had the privilege of listening to that. And Joshua, that was fantastic. A good message is like a treasure deep in the ocean. That was amazing. So it's a great word. Fantastic stuff. So thank you, Josh, for that. He mentioned just kind of an amazing thing. He mentioned that when things were going just right for him, he got a Happy Meal, right? And what's in a Happy Meal, you know, historically? You got like a cheeseburger, some McNuggets, whatever, fry. You get like apple slices, maybe chocolate milk, whatever, and then a toy of some sort, right? Okay. Well, and that is sufficient when you're a youngster, okay? But as you grow, it becomes a little less sufficient. And this was so fun what happened on the National Parks trip because Siwa Fotofili, he was a sophomore this last year, all right? And I can't even imagine how his mom feeds all of them. She does a great job with it. She's amazing, absolutely amazing. But then he goes on a trip like this, and I'm sure there's some food insecurity. Like, is there going to be enough food at a restaurant to feed me, right? And so here's Siwa Fotofili at McDonald's with his Happy Meal. This is a man-child Happy Meal. I think he's got two Big Macs. He's got like four double burgers, whatever. Those ones are over there. A 20-piece McNugget, all right? And there's a, I don't know if you can see the big smile on his face. He's like, I am not going home hungry tonight. Going back, you know, to the hotel hungry. He is so happy. And the cool thing is that he had worked and he earned money, and he actually bought the other folks that were part of the trip ice cream after that as well. So he ate well, and he made sure everybody else ate well too. Incredibly generous young man, just beautiful. So there's a very happy meal, all right, from Siwa. It's just absolutely beautiful. I love it. So great things. This weekend was an amazing weekend at Living Faith Fellowship. We had a wedding yesterday, a beautiful wedding. It was absolutely incredible. We were part of it. And then, as Pastor Phil mentioned, so much happening at State Center. Anybody else itchy in the house of God today, putting up insulation yesterday? Thank you. I see you. We're going to scratching each other's backs doing insulation. Yeah, well done. It was amazing. Electrical team down there, everybody that it takes, it's absolutely, absolutely beautiful. So much happening here in the house of God. We have our summer cruise happening on Wednesday night, so it is so fun to get together and work on this place, getting it ready for the fall and maintaining things, all that. And I have to tell you, I've got this up here because this is kind of my world. I tell you what, our church has a lot of relational problems, and let me explain that, okay, this way. We are so relational. We hang out and all this stuff so much that like we wear out the stuff like the pews, ends of the pews. This one has been safely tucked up there in the corner up there, and it doesn't get the relational abuse that a lot of the pews down here get, okay? So this is one that's in good shape that we're doing a color match to, because we're going to have to work on these pews down here, all right? So we got it here so we can work on the back, matching it up and everything. And so I've got here, I've been working with the folks at Sherwin-Williams. It's not an advertisement. It's just the truth, that working on a lacquer that's gonna match this just right, because these were like a 7-step process that we can't replicate. And after 30 years of relational problems on our pews, we've got a couple here, and it's just so amazing. We're like, hey, let's work on this one. We get it to where it's, and they're like, And I'm like, it's just a little gray, don't you think? They're like, absolutely, that was my thought too. We need a little less magenta. They've got all these different colors that go in and everything. Okay, great. Do you think it's a little bit yellow? And they're like, yes. So you know, we're kind of down about there. And we were working on it. We weren't happy, so they're working on it some more. They want to get it just right. I'm like, these are pews in the house of the Lord. It's got to be just right. We got to get this right. And so working on everything. It's just all these things. It's just one little thing that's happening. And so my message this morning, I kind of continue to dovetail off what Pastor Phil's been talking about, is this: get the mix right. Okay? We've got to get the mix right, all right? It's got to be right, okay? We can't have Pastor Sherry, I don't know what she would do if we ended up with like orange pews, okay? Can't happen, all right? No orange pews in this place. Yeah, not going to happen. And we're also not going to allow purple pews. She might like that, but we're not going to go with the purple either, all right? We've got to get this just right. And it is amazing the work that goes into this. My wife, Suzanne, is doing a lot of the management for our little paint business, and she has this fancy little machine thing that she plugs in her phone. There's an app, and she can just walk up to a wall and go boop, you know, and hit this thing, and it tells her what the color is, all right? And it's crazy, because Sherwin-Williams has 1,700 colors they use, all right? And you're going, we gotta dial this in, get it close, all right? Benjamin Moore has over 3,500 colors that they use, and then there's Pratt Lambert, and there's, and on. And so this kind of helps her dial it in a little bit, but it's still not there perfect a lot of the times, and you've gotta play with it and everything. You've gotta get the mix right. And that's just talking about the color. Then there's all the bases in the paint, all right? Is it lacquer? Is it shellac? Is this acrylic? Is it alkyd? Is it a conversion varnish? Is it, what solvent? Is it just a kind of an oil base, kind of old school? All of those things are going on in it. And then sometimes you catalyze it. You got to have this because it's going to cure up better, whatever. You might have a 2-part, a 3-part epoxy. There's all kinds of different additives to it to keep it from mildewing and all that stuff. Sometimes you put a little bit of something in it to give a little traction. We're doing that right now, and some drains that we're going in the WSU vet school so the horses don't slip on the drains. There's just the additives. To say nothing of the primers that are involved in the whole thing. Is this primer for adhesion? Is this primer for color retention? Is this primer to make sure that we end up with enamel holdout that's just right? Are we trying to block odor? Woo! Don't get me started. I guess I did get me started on paint. And this all these little bitty things that go into getting the mix right. Just with paint, I'm exhausted already. It is so much that goes into this whole thing. There's all different kinds of pigments that go into it as well, depending on what you're shooting for, and on. It ends up being a little bit dizzying. But we take that stuff pretty seriously. If you talk to designers like Devin, she goes, this matters profoundly. Are you kidding me? You know, she's like, he's not even scratching the surface on what has to happen to make this all look right. When designers look in colors and how all this works, Pastor Carey's done such a great job with the colors in here as we continue to work on things and everything. That color up there that's going up here is called Fabulous Grape. Wow. It makes you want to take communion, doesn't it? We'll take communion later. All right, we got the most fabulous grape coming here. Fabulous grape. And all of this stuff matters a ton. If we put that much attention into getting the paint mix right, it makes sense maybe that we give a little bit of attention into getting the mix right in our walk of faith. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about this morning. It's a big deal. Are we paying attention to the mix and digging into it the way that God would have us do that? And so really excited about what God is doing and where this is all going. He is so good. Okay, so get the mix right. We're going to stand together and do our scripture. This is from Daniel 3, verses 16 through 18 in the ESV. All right, I'm going to read it here. Here we go, together. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from the furnace. Whoops. I know, hold up. I did that on purpose because it doesn't say that he will deliver us out of the furnace. It says he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Okay. Pick up where we were. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods
or worship the golden image that you have set up. All right, you can be seated.
Do that because I think we kind of read through this sometimes with kind of this assumption that he's saying, hey, he's going to deliver us from this thing. This is how God moves and all those things. And we've got two things going on there. I think sometimes I'm tempted to look at it and just go, hey, God can deliver them from it, but he may not. And God would. But there's two things that they say here. One is that we believe God can deliver us from this burning fiery furnace. Okay, but it's possible. Okay, he can. But he says, he will deliver us from your hand, O king. Oh, hold on a second. Okay, so what you're saying here is that you might burn up, but you will be delivered. And I think so. I think so. Should the fire consume them, they're free from the king's edict and the king's control. Freedom from that which is keeping them in bondage is guaranteed, all right? Deliverance from the circumstances is not, all right? Super important stuff as we look at what God is doing and what he has for us. Here's the kind of the crux of the matter as we look at this morning. There's a Christian theologian, psychologist, author named Scott Peck, and he talks about some of this stuff and the spiritual disciplines and what it means to really embrace Jesus in our lives and the discipline that we need to go through to get there. And he says this, and I think especially it seems like he's speaking to some of us sometimes as the charismatic Christians because we think we get sort of a free pass through difficulty sometimes. Well, we're anointed, you know, he says, absolutely not. He says, there are no shortcuts to sainthood. There are no shortcuts to sainthood. And when it comes to embracing Jesus and what he has for us, we have to start at the beginning and go through the middle. We have to do that. We have to do that. And we see that happening in the lives of these four Hebrews and what's going on here. So let's just kind of a quick background thing and lay the groundwork for what's going on here. So King Nebuchadnezzar II is the king here that's involved in this whole thing. And he actually ransacked Jerusalem three times in his 43-year reign. He's like, man, we got some good stuff. Let's go back and get some more. I mean, he went back three times. The second time, he really destroyed Jerusalem and the whole thing. So part of what they would do is they take the best of everything, including the best people. And he took young men to become the wise people and servants in his empire and everything that's going on there, all right? He did this all the time with all kinds of nations. There are a lot of people say he may have been, because of the riches of Babylon and everything involved in his reign, the richest person. Again, based on the riches of Babylon, the richest person in the history of mankind. It's crazy, all right? They would besiege these cities, these nations and everything, take everything they had. They would exact tributes for years and years and years. He controlled the trade routes to everything, not just the Strait of Hormuz, everything, the trade routes everywhere. And was in complete control of the whole thing. Unbelievably, they say unimaginably wealthy was Nebuchadnezzar II because of all these things and how he did all this, okay? So he takes a bunch of people from Jerusalem. We kind of have that at the beginning of Daniel 1. He takes them. He wants the best. And so he's got a bunch. And he starts to train up these young men, probably about 12 years old, Daniel was, with his friends, all right? And trains them. And the whole point is to be wise. And he tells them he wants them, through his eunuch that was overseeing all of them, he wants them to learn everything there is about Babylon. Learn it all and to have the best of Babylon, all that stuff. And Daniel and his friends, like, we've got to be, that's not what God has for us. And so they're making some really difficult decisions at 12 years old in this whole process. Fast forward a little bit, and we know where some of this goes, and a lot of us, not all of us, but a lot of us familiar with the story of where this all goes. He builds this statue, 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide, interesting proportions. We don't know exactly what it looked like. The statue of gold, tells everybody he wants them to worship it, and these three young men say, we're not going to worship anything but our God, and he is able to deliver us. He will deliver us from you. He can deliver us from the fire, but we're not going to bow down. And God rescues them. And in fact, they are in the presence of God there in the fire. And so they're a little bit of the background on this whole thing. So what's going on in this, as we look at this progression, super important to understand, all right? And so we're starting beginning here in Daniel 1. We've got four steps in kind of the phases of them moving from where they are as young to this sort of ultimate moment in the fiery furnace and what's going on there. Okay, the first one is this. I think there's so much in this for us. We have to leave them. If we're going to get the mix right, the first thing we've got to do is leave the mix. We've got to leave the mix. Another way to say that is that we are called, okay? We are called. Most of us recognize that God has called us out of the world and called us to himself. So we've got to leave the mix that we're part of and embrace the mix of God and what he has for us, all right? Super important part of all this. It's not really stated explicitly, but it's clearly implied that these young men had made some decisions when they were young. They heard the call of God and said, we are going to respond to him. And we're going to leave whatever is of the world, and we're going to embrace our God. And we know that this is really a really important part of all this because God could have protected Israel. He did. He did for generations, okay? But they left their God. They abandoned our God. And so the Nebuchadnezzar, they were vulnerable to him and everything that he was doing. God did not protect them from that. So in the middle of all the chaos of what's going on there in Israel and in Jerusalem and all these people abandoning God, there is a handful of people. There's always a remnant of the people of God. These handful of people still serving him. And these four young men are some of them. It is a crazy thing. And if you look at their names and what they mean, it really kind of lays it out for us. Some Daniel, his name means the Lord is my judge or my defender. 12 years old, this is his name. And then Shadrach's real name is Hananiah, which means God is gracious, God has favored, God has protected. And then Meshach's real name, his Hebrew name is Mishael, which means who is like God? Nobody. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Everywhere you go, your name asks this rhetorical question, who is like God? And people are like, nobody. They see you and they're like, nobody. And you're like, wait, what are you saying? And there's the correct answer, nobody is like our God. It's kind of the ultimate question. And his name asks it all the time and begs the answer that goes without saying. And then Abednego's Hebrew name is Azariah, which means helped by God. The Lord has helped. See, their identity was secure even as they were taken away to Babylon. Their identity was secure. Their culture was a mess. The nation was a mess. But their identity was secure. They understood who they were and defined by their names and who they are in God from the very beginning in this. It's amazing. And the problem is that too often we dabble with our calling. And so we're wondering why our Christianity isn't working. We're wondering why our Christianity doesn't work out, and we're not working out our Christianity. We're just dabbling with it. And they embraced it wholesale. They were sold out, and so it changed everything. It absolutely changed. And we have to ask ourselves, how are we responding to the call? How are we really responding to the call? In college, like a lot of people, I was doing some sports and stuff, kind of goofing around and having fun. And before I started coming to church here, I had a lot of time on my hands. I was like, what am I going to do with myself? I was working some. And one of the things that I did, I can't necessarily say I was an athlete, but I was athletic, but whatever. And I started playing golf, all right? And on Saturdays, I would go up to the U of I golf course. At the time, it was $40 for a semester pass for a student. $40. It was great. I was like, this is crazy, amazing. And I would go to the dining hall when it first opened, get going in the morning. Nobody else was there because they were out, you know, partying, whatever, Friday night. And I would just go to bed Friday night. I wasn't going to CCF yet. And I just kind of, you know, it was people like, you're pathetic. Like, you're going to bed? I'm like, yes, I am. You know, I get up in the morning, get breakfast. The moment they open, and I would grab my bag and head up the hill up to the U of I golf course. And I had time before the sunset, while the course was open, to walk and play 3 rounds of golf. So I get 54 holes in, all right? And so I'd do that. And I just loved it. It was amazing. And you kind of know who you're going to play with. You just kind of meet people from all over the place. And I would walk 3 rounds of golf on Saturday. Now, I don't know if I could walk 3 rounds of golf in a month, all right? But I would do that on Saturdays at the time. And then one Saturday, I'm up there, and one of the guys that was in the teaching professional program, his name was Dave, and Dave was like, hey, Joe, I was going to play, and so we could go out to number one together, if that's cool. And I'm like, yeah, it'd be great. He said, I've got a friend that's going to be joining us at some point. I don't know when, but he'll catch up with us later. I'm like, great. So we got, we play the first couple of holes, and we're walking up to the third tee, which at the time was 12. Anyway, we're walking up there to that tee. It's kind of a big hill. We get up to the top of that hill, and you're kind of like, ugh. I would leave my bag at the bottom of it and just take up a club and 8 balls. And so I'm up there, the top. and then all of a sudden, we see his friend, it turns out, running up that hill with his golf bag in his hand. He had run from the clubhouse all the way out here and then run up the hill. And he gets to the top of the hill and drops his bag down. And he's not even breathing hard. And I'm like this. Okay. And Dave says, hey, here's my friend. His name's Dan. Dan, this is Joe. I'm like, hey, I met Dan. And he said, I don't know if he's doing the decathlon here at U of I. And he's doing real well. And we're going to see what happens. Well, it turns out this guy was a really good golfer. I'm in phenomenal shape. It looked like a Greek god. I'm like, who is this guy? And it turns out it's Dan O'Brien, okay, who was on the way, I think it was 2 years later, he set the new world record in the decathlon, okay? I know a guy that was on the track team at the time, and he says, you know, the decathletes all do their events, just the decathletes. But if he had been involved in those 10 events competitively with everybody else, he would have won probably 7 of them at every track meet. Which you can't do that, you know, they only let you do 4. But he would have won 7. He was that incredible of an athlete. And I recognized that I might do athletic things, but I was not an athlete. Okay? I was clearly not an athlete. And there was some comfort in knowing that this guy was, you know, one of the best, arguably the best athlete in the world. And I maybe even tied him on one hole. I mean, that was pretty cool. You know, you're like, oh yeah, you know, we both parred 7 or something, or maybe bogeyed, whatever. Anyway, and there's a whole different approach to this whole thing. And I'm thinking about this going, this is in so many ways our Christianity. Do I have a recreational sort of approach to it? Like, hey, I just want enough Christianity to kind of make my life work, you know? I get to the top of the hill, the challenge, and drop my bag and... You know, but don't ask any more of me than that, all right? But Dan O'Brien, a completely different approach, right? To him, running out there with his golf bag, I said, this is just fun, you know? And I'm like, cart, please, you know? Clean up on hole number 3, all right? Can I get a cart out here, all right? Some whole different approach to the whole thing. What is our approach to all this? These 4 Hebrew boys, Daniel, all right, and his 3 friends, as we look at where this whole story goes and everything, took a completely different approach from their very beginning. They understood what they were called to and who they were called to, and that defined the choices that they made their entire lives. Absolutely everything that they did, instead of, you know, I think maybe I'll do something athletic this Saturday, it changed everything for them. C.S. Lewis says, I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else. Christianity can't just color our lives a little bit. It's got to be everything. We can't just integrate Jesus into our lives a little bit. We've got to be completely immersed in Christ. Christ has got to be everything. Recognizing the calling and saying, that will determine everything that I do in life. Loved it. What David was sharing this morning as he led in worship and spoke to us a little bit, this is something that God's been putting on my heart, is that I'm just going, where really is my focus? So much, it's all out there. We see so many things around us, but we can really only focus on one thing. And it's not that all these other things in life can't be in our vision and all those things, but I can only really focus on one thing. And is Christ the periphery? Is Christ over to the side somewhere? Yeah, I can kind of see him a little bit over there. They do eye tests with me all the time. They're like, how many fingers am I holding up? I'm like, I have no idea. Bring it a little closer. There we go, right? Okay. They're seeing what your peripheral vision is, all these field tests and everything. And is it like, where is Christ in my life? I don't know. Could you bring him a little closer? I kind of lost focus a little bit here, all right? Jesus, I just need you closer. Really? Or am I looking to him in everything, understanding I'm called to him, I'm called by him, I'm called to be near him, I'm called to focus on him, and the rest, let it be the periphery that it's supposed to be. They understood that, and that took them through. Second, we've got to stay away from mixture. Stay away from mixture. We are to be consecrated. We are to be consecrated, set apart. And that's where they were at. That's what they understood in this whole thing. The king and his wise men chose the cream of the crop and said, we're going to set these guys apart. They're going to be the future elites in Babylon. We want them to talk like we talk. We want them to think like we think. They had them immersed in the language and the literature of Babylon. We want them to eat what we eat even. Okay, and Daniel and his friends said, hey, we can't do this. We can't do this. We can't have mixture in our lives. We are consecrated. We are set apart at this young age. We can't entertain anything that would compromise us being set apart to our God. All right? And this is powerful stuff because when you see what happens with their names, and it's not that they were trying to just kind of give them a little different perspective. They were trying to change their identity with a twist on who they had been before. Check this out. Daniel, remember his name is the Lord is my judge or protector. They gave him the name Belshazzar, which means Baal protects the king. Your purpose is to help represent to this nation that Baal protects the king. And Daniel's name is the Lord is my protector. The Lord is my judge. Do you see the perversion of his name and identity that they were playing with there? They're trying to erase his identity and say, you're gonna have a new identity and purpose here in Babylon. And he would not do it. Hananiah, his name, God is gracious. God has favored and protected. And his new name, Shadrach, meant the inspiration of Aku, the moon god. He's the inspiration of the, and so instead of God protecting, God being his identity and favor, now he's the inspiration of the moon god with this new name. Mishael, this is one is even more profound. Who is like God? And what Meshach means, the Babylonian name, is who is what Aku is, the moon god. So he goes from who is like God to there's no one like the moon god. All right, taking the identity and just and putting a just enough spin on it to begin to shift it away from what he was called and committed to being. Azariah, helped by God, the Lord has helped. And Abednego, means servant or helper of Nego, the orchestrator of human fate. And so there, these twists on this whole thing, we're gonna shift your identity. And here's what the world does. They say, look, we're gonna change some things, okay? We don't like how this whole Christianity thing is impacting things. But I tell you what, we should be able to stand and say, you can change my name. You can try to erase my culture. You can try to wipe away everything that is dear to me, and I will stand committed, consecrated to my God. There will not be mixture in my life. There will be one focus. And if 12-year-old boys could do that, then I think it's incumbent on us, those of us that are adults especially, to say, this is how I will live my life. It cannot be done on accident. It must be done on purpose. You can try to integrate me into this whole thing, but I am immersed in my God, and that is where I will stand. The other thing that's implied in this, in all of this, is there were almost certainly some other boys, some other people from Israel who fit the frame of what they were looking for, and their names are lost in this story. Lost in this story, and probably because they did not have the resolve that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah had to serve their God. But the decision was made way back then when they were invited to have the best of the world. And perhaps it looks like they embraced, they partook of the best the world had to offer, and in doing so, they lost the best of our God. We cannot have both. We've got to get out of the mixture. Lord, help us. Third, this kind of keeps going. Don't get mixed up. Don't get mixed up. Brings us to our passage that we're doing right now. We've got to be committed. We must be committed, called, consecrated, and then committed. We can make all kinds of bold statements, but the resolve, the strength of our commitment is revealed when we face the fire. And that's what happened to these Hebrew young men. Exactly what happened to them. Mentioned Nebuchadnezzar's wealth. Check, this is kind of crazy, all right? People speculate. What was this statue, was it hollow? Kind of like the cheap Easter Bunny things maybe that you got when you were a kid. You're like, oh, you're like, I thought this was 16 pounds of chocolate, and turns out it's 1.6 ounces, you know, whatever, right? You know, it's each thing. It may have been hollow, but it may have been solid gold. If it was hollow, in today's value, it would have been worth about $500 million, about $500 million. If it was solid, it would be worth 100 times that. It would be worth about $500 trillion, $500 billion worth of gold. And historians say that it is absolutely reasonable to expect that he had that kind of liquid asset laying around to be able to build a statue worth $500 trillion today's value. There's one man on the planet whose personal net worth touches that, and it is not very liquid, all right? I don't think Elon Musk can write a check for $500 billion right now, all right? It's just not gonna happen. It's immense wealth. Would he really have done that, or would he have shortcutted it and made it gold? The thing is that he was looking for something of great value to attach himself to give him more meaning and identity. And so probably it would have been solid gold. He wanted something of immense value to worship to give him greater identity and purpose. Why worship something hollow when you have the assets to make it solid? It's probably what he, can you imagine that? $500 billion sitting up there in front of everybody as they're being told to worship it. Absolutely incredible thing. Did he have it? And so the Hebrews are faced with this whole thing. What are we gonna do with all of this? And what does this all mean? After Nebuchadnezzar lays this whole thing out and tells them this is what they've got to do. And of course, we know that they said, we won't worship your God. In fact, in their heart of hearts, they're saying, we can't worship your God. To worship your God would mean that we have to turn from our God. We have to deny him, forsake him, and worship that which you have made. And we cannot do that. We absolutely will not do that. We believe that he can save us from the flames, but even if he doesn't, our level of commitment is great enough to see us through, and we will be freed from you, O King. The ultimate freedom is really what's at stake in all of these things, and we have to ask ourselves, Jesus, are you the goal, or am I looking to something else? Their commitment saw them through. What is the strength of our commitment, church? What is the resolve in our spirits when the test really comes? We are so blessed to be surrounded by so many great people. Josh spoke about it some last week, and it's come up this morning even in the service and worship and everything. So many great people around us, all of us from different backgrounds. We've got people with all measures of broken lives and broken families and successes and failures and strengths and weaknesses, but God brings us all together and says, this is how I build the family of God. This is how I bring my people together. It is so beautiful. It is such a diverse, beautiful thing that he is doing here, and if we have the resolve together to see each other through, there is no limit to what our God can do and how his name will be glorified and lifted up, which brings us to the last part of it. Number four, we have to get lost in the mix. We have to get lost in the mix. This is where we find Christ. Notice this. Jesus didn't show up until all was lost. He didn't show up and go, you know what? I'm gonna walk right with you through the valley of the shadow of death, okay? They made their commitment. They said what their resolve was going to be. They are thrown into the fiery furnace, and it's not until they're all the way in and it is all good or all bad, it's all done. It's not until then that Jesus shows up. A lot of the times I think in our faith, we're going, okay, he's with me in the boat. And we go, well, maybe not. Okay, he's gonna call me out on the waves like he did Peter. Jesus is right there saying, come to me. That wasn't the case for them at all. They're just going, this is our resolve, this is our commitment, and whatever happens, there's nothing else that we can do. We will follow our God, and we will not bend, we will not bow. You cannot change our resolve. You can call us whatever you want. Our identity is secure and firm, and do with us what you will. And it is amazing what happens here as the result. See, the comfortable life is not the guarantee. Surviving is not the goal. Prosperity is not the promise. But Jesus is the prize. We may not get any of those things. We may not be comfortable. We may not survive. We may not prosper. But if we have Jesus, we've got enough. Pastor, all that really matters. Pastor Phil has spoken to us about a theophany, right? It's where God shows up. There's some sort of visible representation of God. There's about 50 of those or so in the Old Testament, but there's this smaller, narrower class of theophanies called Christophanies, where they say, and Pastor Phil talked about this somewhere, Jesus shows up in human, like bodily form. There's only about four or five of these, depending on how you see it. There's only a few of them. And when it happens, it's an unbelievable thing because someone has been through so many profound steps in the process of getting to where they are that it's like God goes, all right, I know it's not time yet. All right, Jesus isn't showing up on the scene in bodily form here for another 1,000 or 2 years and everything, but I just can't help it. Abraham, you heard me say sacrifice your son, the promised son, and you got all the stuff together. You made the journey to the mountain. You climbed up the mountain with the wood and the fire and everything. You tied him up. The knife is in the air, and here comes a Christophany. I'm going to give you Jesus. I'm going to show Jesus to someone who's no way he would have seen it because it's Old Testament. There's just a few times where that happened. Abraham was one of them. This is another one. They're in that furnace, and it's like God goes, the steps to get here are unbelievable. What they chose to do from when they were 10 or so, we're not even sure exactly when, to make this decision, they embrace their calling. They embrace consecration, would not embrace what the world had for them. They embraced me. They kept that commitment through the toughest things. And so now here they are in the fire. They need a little Jesus. Let's get a little Jesus down there to them. This is going to absolutely transform everything. It's a special, very unique thing that our God does in just a few places. And I wonder, in our own lives, as we wrap up today, if a lot of times we're missing Jesus in our walk. Because somewhere back there along the way, when we're really supposed to understand what's supposed to happen in the mix, if we've abandoned the calling to some degree, if we've abandoned consecration to some degree, if our commitment has wavered, and so we're not finding Christ. I don't think there's any problem with Christianity. There's a problem to the degree that we are embracing Christ. But in that place, we will find him. Yes. If you're like me, you go, I really don't want to have to be in the fire where there's only two ways this can go. I really don't want to have to be there to really find Christ. And so maybe I'm tempted to stop somewhere along the way in it all. And our God is asking us, if you will have the resolve to stay in it, to keep it, you'll find Jesus. And this morning, as we partake of communion together, I believe that we get to embrace in sort of a similar sort of way as a Christophany today, where we get to experience Jesus represented in the bread and the juice, the body and blood of Jesus, making for the way for redemption, for us to be saved. And today we get, in a spiritual way that we don't really understand, an opportunity to say, Jesus, we're embracing you. We're embracing all of you. But we'll really only understand that if we have left all those other things behind. So this morning, as we get ready to partake, would you take a moment to do this? Think about where you are called, when you were called, and how you've embraced that call. Think about where you had made a commitment. God, I'm going to follow you. I'm all in. I'm going to leave these things behind. Think about where you said, I'm consecrated. I will not embrace the world. I'm going to embrace you, Jesus. And that there's been compromise in any of those things. And we're going to have a hard time seeing Jesus on the other side of it. But if we'll repent and embrace him and his sacrifice for us, we see Jesus. We see Jesus. So, this morning, let's bow our heads for just a moment before we partake. And you come up whenever you are ready to partake. This isn't our thing. This is God's thing. This is Jesus' thing. And just do a little business with him. Jesus, clear the air. Jesus, I want to get things right. Jesus, where I have had mixture in my life, it's not from you. Let the world come in. Let me be set apart afresh to you and your purposes. I want Jesus. You just whisper that with me this morning. I want Jesus. Oh, Jesus, you're the prize. Oh, Jesus, you are the prize.
We thank you for your sacrifice. We thank you when we could not make a way, when we were lost, you did. We thank you, Jesus. In your name we pray.